Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the 2016 training camp, the 2016 preseason is in the books. All the practice film, all the game film is in the vault. It was quite a month.
All the stories are written. All the sound is recorded. Yes, it was quite a month, Mike. It was fun being a part of this, working with you. My fifth training camp.
My 11th in a full time capacity.
So. Unbelievable, and that just shows you how fast these things fly. Over 36 hours of practice time on the field that was available to the public. It was quite a month, and now we are set, ready, and raring to go for the regular season.
Yeah, well, the Packers have roster decisions to make. At the time of the taping of this episode, the Packers have yet to reduce the roster to the mandated 53. And if you were to pick one position group where maybe those final roster decisions are going to be the most difficult for the Packers coaches and personnel staff, what would you say?
Got to go with the secondary would be my decision and okay. My choice. Already a deep group when you're considering their holdings at both safety and cornerback, but they found a way, as they always seem to really make that group even more deep. And I think it starts with the safeties, Kentrell Bryce, Marwin Evans, two young, very talented men, played well in the preseason. I thought both of them ended up on a high note. And then at cornerback, two really nice picks in that game against Kansas City, Ladarius Gunter, Josh Hawkins getting his second interception of training camp.
Right, yep.
And then also Robertson Daniel, the practice squad holdover from a year ago, I thought played really well. Nice, big, lengthy cornerback. So that's a position with the job that Joe Witt and Darren Perry do. They're not going to make it easy for the personnel department. That's going to be a tough one, I think, for them when cuts are due.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys ended with a strong final statement, you know, trying to make that final case for a roster spot. And we talked about this when the determination that some of these guys have to make the roster. All you have to do is look at Marwin Evans in that Kansas City game. He takes that nasty hit on punt coverage in the fourth quarter there. He's down on the field for a while. He's being attended to. Players are kneeling around, not really sure what's going on. He eventually gets up and walks off under his own power. And then a couple of snaps later, he's right back out there on the field, obviously determined to do everything and anything he possibly can to make this team.
Absolutely. And that's what you see this time of the year. Now, obviously, you don't want guys playing through injuries, but you see them gutting it out, going the extra mile. And with Evans, when he was down, as you stated, a lot of players were down on their knees. You were kind of worried that this might be a pretty significant thing. So to see him not only come off on his own power, but then come back into the field to play, I think spoke volumes about him and played well, too. So all the guys talk about this. This is the time of the year where you got to put everything on the line. It's the difference between a job, practice squad, and being out of the NFL completely. You need to leave no stone unturned. And I thought there was a lot of guys, and as I mentioned, particularly in that secondary group, that certainly did that against the Chiefs.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy talked all preseason long about young players making high-impact plays in the preseason games, and that certainly continued against Kansas City. It was really a theme throughout all of the preseason games, and I thought there were more of those in this particular preseason than maybe some past ones in terms of those splash plays. Josh Hawkins, you mentioned, had two interceptions. Marwin Evans, Ladarius Gunter both had an interception. You flip sides of the ball to the offense. A receiver like Jared Aberderis, that diving catch he made down the sideline from Joe Callahan against Kansas City, just a tremendous play for a big gain. And then later on, he runs a punt back 42 yards. Just a tremendous punt return. And I don't want to end up potentially sounding like a fool here if the Packers make another decision, but you look at what Jared Aberderis did throughout training camp, throughout the preseason. He had a touchdown catch in San Francisco. Everybody at the beginning of camp was wondering if he was the odd man out at receiver. He's as in as any receiver, I think, after those first two on the Packers roster. I don't see how the Packers can let this guy go.
His play has certainly warranted that, and I thought that's the most important thing with Jared Aberderis. He's not going to wow you with speed. He's not the biggest receiver in the world, but I've said this so many times, he just gets it done.
Yeah.
The punt return was a perfect epitome. microcosm, whatever you want to call it, of Jared Aberderis making something happen where maybe necessarily there wasn't a whole lot there. There was a lot of guys breathing down his neck, makes the first defender miss to the outside edge, has the open sideline, takes it back for 42 yards, 71 yards on 5 punt returns. They have a very viable guy in Micah Hyde as well in that capacity. But I thought Jared Aberderis, with the training camp he put together, being able to stay healthy from practice one all the way to the very end.
Yeah, that was key for him. Yeah, that was key for him to stay healthy. Well, we've got more players to talk about from standouts in the preseason after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, staying with the theme of young players making an impression in the preseason, I think if you look at this Packers draft class, third-round draft pick Kyler Fackrell, there may not be a player on this roster who, from day one of training camp to the final preseason game, improved more than Fackrell. The first week, maybe even 2 weeks of training camp, it was as though he was invisible, just trying to feel his way, didn't really do a whole lot, didn't stand out. By this final preseason game in Kansas City, led the team with 10 tackles, got his second sack of the preseason, had a handful of other tackles for loss in the backfield. Just a tremendous progress, tremendous growth over the course of 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah, I think you and I discussed this earlier. It's that Brett Hundley factor is what I kind of equated it to. Brett Hundley, when he came in last year, especially during the offseason program, looked very raw, didn't quite have everything together, was really fighting tooth and nail with Matt Blanchard early on for that number three job.
Yep.
And then right around that first and second preseason game hit his stride, saw the same exact thing from Fackrell. We're talking about a guy here. They always use the analogy of having big paws. He has big paws. This is a guy that, I mean, you can see the growth in him. You can see where the potential lies and why the Packers liked him enough to take him in the third round. And for getting as much playing time as he did against Kansas City, whether it was the tackles for the loss, whether it was getting his second sack at camp, I thought he did everything that you want to see. Considering we're not sure how much he's going to play defensively this season with all the depth that they have there, I thought you saw everything you wanted to see out of him in that final preseason sort of send off,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah, and not to say that Kyler Fackrell's roster spot was in jeopardy. I don't think the Packers were going to cut a third-round draft pick. We had talked in earlier shows about how they're going to give him time to develop, and we've already seen some of that development. He may have sent a couple of 49ers offensive linemen to the waiver wire the way he played. I'm sorry, not 49ers, Kansas City Chiefs offensive linemen.
49ers,
too. He played pretty well in San Francisco,
yeah,
too. But shifting gears quickly to another pass rusher who, not a young guy, but more of a veteran guy who looks like he will have a potentially big role. We saw Dayton Jones get another sack in Kansas City. What's your take on where he is and what he has shown the coaching staff this preseason?
Yeah, we talked in a couple other episodes about Carl Bradford and how he sort of settled in this year and what we thought in terms of the development he made. Dayton Jones is a guy who's produced for the Packers in his first three NFL seasons, but he just looks like a different football player to me now. He was in a situation where he wasn't a natural 3-4-5 tech end. He was sort of out of place as a 3 inside. So he was kind of relegated to just dime duties as an interior rusher. They move him outside. He drops some weight. Now he can get on the field in first and second down. And I think if you're Mike McCarthy, Dom Capers, and the rest of this coaching staff, you like what you saw from Dayton Jones this summer. 2 sacks, 1 from the outside, 1 from the interior that he got against Kansas City. I'm really impressed with Dayton Jones. I think he's in a good place right now and really set up, as you alluded to have a good season.
Yeah, I think his quickness off the ball right now is what is the most impressive and what is going to allow him to either play on the outside or inside in the sub packages to get after the quarterback from some different angles. And I think that could be a really key piece for Dom Capers in terms of how he goes about attacking opposing offenses with week one now right around the corner.
Absolutely, Mike. And they have Julius Peppers, and not to say, you know, Julius Peppers and Dayton Jones are entirely different body types.
Right.
But now they have someone else who probably fits that mold of that elephant-type rusher a little bit, like Peppers did, in terms of a guy who first, second down can rush outside, third down he can rush as an interior three technique rusher in their nickel, or I should say their dime and NASCAR packages. He seems to fit that void well right now, and I'm excited to see what it can do now that you can get Dayton Jones probably a bigger role in this defense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, we'll throw it to a break. But before, let's take care of a little bit of business here, Wes.
Nice.
Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it?
It is.
Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12th by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, the other big thing we saw in Kansas City in the final preseason game was the Packers' debut of new punter Jacob Shum. Now, earlier in the week, the Packers released rookie punter Peter Mortel. That left Tim Maste as the only punter in training camp. Then the next day, the Packers put in a waiver claim on Shum as he's released by Tampa Bay, and the Packers get Shum and then release Tim Maste, turning the job over for now to Shum. And it looked like he had a pretty solid first showing in a Packers uniform.
He really did. And when you look at his whole 24, 36, 48-hour sort of whirlwind that he had, going from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after losing the job there to Brian Anger, and then coming up here to Green Bay, flew in under the cover of darkness on Wednesday morning, horse and buggy. No, yeah. 2 a.m. he got here on Wednesday. They have practice right away in the morning. Their final walkthrough for the game against Kansas City. Gets a few hours of sleep. Gets to the practice field. Said he punted really well during what is obviously a private practice the Packers do the day before games. Held for Mason Crosby a little bit.
Yeah, worked on some of the field goals.
Yeah, and as you said, punted really well, I thought, in Kansas City. 8 punts in that game was actually a career high for him. Got a lot of work.
Yeah, I got a workout.
And arguably his best punt was the one that ended up trickling in the end zone for a touchback. Bounced twice inside the 5-yard line, no one there to corral it. If he would have gotten that one, I would have been really interested to see what his net average would have turned out as.
Yeah, no kidding. That one cost him 20 yards on the net average because of the touchback. But, you know, he had, I believe it was at least 3 of his punts, if I'm not mistaken, that were
10.
Fair caught inside the 20-yard line. I thought he did a really good job with hang time. The thing that Mike McCarthy was most impressed with that he mentioned after the game was the direction of the kicks, being able to punt the ball outside the numbers, the idea being then that you pin the return man closer to the sideline and not give him as much room to work with. And we've talked before about how one of the strengths of the Packers punt coverage are the gunners. So if your gunners are the strength, you punt the ball outside the numbers and give one of those gunners the shortest route to the ball, the shortest route to the returner to try to limit the return man.
And I don't know if there was a correlation with Ron Zook coming on board with being the special teams coordinator or if it was just a transition that they made over this past year, but the Packers are all about directional punting now. That's the goal. They want to be able, as you said, to limit the amount of field that a returner has to work with. And that's the direction it's gone here in the last year or so.
Yep.
So that is going to be an important part of it. I thought he showed really good control on his kicks. As you said, did a pretty solid job of being able to keep it to the sideline. And even the one that maybe wasn't the best hit that he had of the night, they covered it really well and were able to keep it to, I think, a 37 or 39-yard fair catch. So positive first impressions, I think, for Jake Shum. And now the biggest key is going to be carrying this forward, because he is. He was with Tampa last year. He knows what it's like to not be able to retain the job. He's been around a lot of places in the NFL. That was his third stint with the Buccaneers. Had two stops with the Jets, wasn't even in the league his first year in 2012 when he came out. So he knows what's on the line here, and I think he definitely gets the sense of urgency and the expectations that are going to come with getting this opportunity.
Yeah, and this Kansas City game, you mentioned the limited sleep and whatnot before his first practice and then jumping on a plane with the team to Kansas City. This was a pressure-packed performance for him because the Packers are not necessarily done scanning the waiver wire, scouting the other punters around the league who might be released, who are in competitions, who may lose out on jobs to other punters at final roster cutdown time. Now, that's not to say the Packers still might not make a move at some point. We really don't know who else they may have their eye on, but with the pressure on and needing to make a first impression and perhaps take the eyes, off the waiver wire, not quite so focused on it for another punter. Shum did what he had to do in this first game.
I think you brought up a great point there, Mike. It was the pressure pack situation. Not only do you need to impress, but you need to prove that you can take this job and run with it. It was only one game. We have to see exactly what happens in the weeks and months to follow. But he didn't crush and fall under that pressure. He stemmed the tide, so to speak. Yeah. I mean, he did exactly what you wanted to see from him from day one, and I think there's going to be a lot of interest with this. Obviously, you're going to have to make sure that the kicking operation is where you need it to be, but I think he proved that if he keeps doing, as he said, what he knows he can do, there might be a place for him in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll definitely be watching that in the weeks ahead as the regular season gets going. With that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, a couple of other issues that came up in a big news week, not just the final week of training camp, but other things as well. One of them, Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers cleared by the NFL in the PED investigation. Matthews and Peppers insisted on their innocence, that this was completely bogus from the beginning. They reiterated that when they spoke to reporters on the first day of training camp. Now they have been officially cleared by the NFL. Good to get this over with before the regular season starts, and now it's all about moving forward and looking at the football season.
You could tell the sense of relief with both guys. I know, especially in Clay Matthews' situation, he talked at pretty good length in the locker room afterwards, going into exactly what his thought process was. He mentioned both he and Julius Peppers, they were in really constant communication with the NFL Players Association, trying to figure out exactly what the best course of action was, because you don't want it to become a situation where anybody says anything and then suddenly you have to look into it. That was their concern. So finally, when the NFL issued the ultimatum that they needed to submit to these interviews or face possible suspension, the way Matthews put it is he wasn't going to fall on the sword for something that he didn't do and knows there was no wrongdoing involved. So
right.
him and Peppers did meet with the NFL. NFL said there was no credible evidence. Obviously, when you look at the Al Jazeera America report, their main subject of that, recanting his story. Yep. So they got through it. And now the focus is on to Jacksonville. And I think, especially in Clay Matthews' situation with how he went into discussions about it, this is something that it didn't distract him. It wasn't a distraction on the field, but it also is now something positive to put behind him.
Yeah, it's behind him. And when you look across the NFL landscape, probably the biggest story of the week is one that will have a big impact on the Packers. Teddy Bridgewater for the Minnesota Vikings in practice going down a non-contact knee injury. He's out for the season. An absolute shocker, and completely changes the landscape of things in the NFC North, with Minnesota attempting to defend their NFC North title after winning it last season. They're now with Sean Hill, a veteran, as their backup quarterback, and Joel Stave, the undrafted rookie from Wisconsin, is next in line. What impact does this have going forward here in the NFC North race?
A really promising young quarterback. I've talked about it before in the show. I think he has remarkable poise, and I was very interested to see what the next step was going to be for him with them adding some more weapons to that offense. But even more than that, I think the person, I don't know Teddy Bridgewater, but one thing that's really impressed me is whether it's the media, the coaches, Packers personnel executive Alonzo Highsmith even tweeted about it this past week, saying he's known Bridgewater since high school, just a remarkable young man. The way he carries himself, there's a lot of respect there. So, yes, you do need to overcome the loss of a young, promising quarterback, but also someone that appears to be pretty highly regarded by his teammates and his peers. That's going to be the biggest key, I think, for Minnesota. They have a lot of talent there. I'm not counting them out by any means. I mentioned that in our insider inbox this week. They are still a formidable team, but this is going to be a big obstacle in those hopes to take that next step this season.
Yeah, and if there's any coach who can navigate the Vikings through something like this, there's a lot of faith in Mike Zimmer. He has built a top-tier defense with the talent on that side of the ball. We all know they've got a Hall of Fame running back in Adrian Peterson. And Mike Zimmer even mentioned, you talk about a guy who has perspective. This is a guy who, you know, several years ago lost his wife, just a tragic loss for him and his family. It's about perspective here. This is not the end of the world. And Mike Zimmer is not going to let these guys fold up the tent or feel sorry for themselves that they lost their starting quarterback. He's one of everybody's best friend on the team. He's a leader on the team. But Mike Zimmer is going to get the Vikings to move on from this.
Well, and let's just be real, too. I know Mike Zimmer wasn't there, but the Minnesota Vikings made the playoffs in 2012 with Christian Ponder and Joe Webb as their quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm nothing away from either one of those guys, but it showed that they can make a run when Adrian Peterson is running at the top of his abilities. And yes, the defense that Zimmer's created there, extremely tough, sets them up well for what they do offensively, allows Bridgewater, when he was healthy, to manage the game. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Adrian Peterson. Can he still keep doing what he's doing now as he's crossed that 30-year mark? That's going to, I think, be the ultimate indication of how far they go, and probably Sean Hill, seeing if he can step in and be that guy they need him to be.
Yeah, real quickly, do you think the Vikings go get another quarterback at some point?
I think so, but I don't think it'll be a veteran. Okay. I think it'll just be they'll maybe claim a young guy.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll call that a wrap on Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all the coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. The regular season is right around the corner. We'll see you next time.